Our next case for argument this morning is United States against Burnett. Mr. Boyce.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Don Boyce. I'm here this morning on behalf of the government. The aim of this appeal is to address two questions that are left unanswered by this court's decision in United States versus Buckmeyer. In that case, the court held that a certain notice sent by the Illinois Department of Corrections served as a restoration of rights for the purposes of the Federal Firearms Act. The questions that this appeal aims to address are whether or not that a defendant who claims to have received one of those notices has to show that he actually got it or that the notice was merely sent. So whether or not the restoration of rights occurs upon sending or receiving. The second question is whether or not a letter purporting to restore a defendant's rights on a conviction applies to any prior convictions or whether it applies just to that conviction for which he was just discharged from parole. In this case, Albert Burnett had five prior convictions for crimes of violence. He had two attempted murders that he served concurrent sentences on. He had a murder that he served his sentence on partly concurrently with his revocation sentence on his attempted murders. He also had a aggravated battery conviction and a felony domestic battery conviction. It was the government's position that those five were enough for him to qualify as an armed career criminal.
Would the two attempt murder convictions together with the domestic violence battery in 2005 be enough to get him into the status of an armed career criminal?
Yes, Your Honor.
So how we answer the second question that you posed may resolve the case without having to answer the first?
I would suggest the court could answer them in whatever order the court prefers. But yes, if you answer the second question in the government's favor, you may not have to address the first question. I would note that the first question has given the government and defendants litigants some problems in the wake of Buckmeyer, so we'd appreciate an answer. But if the court isn't inclined to give one, that's up to you. The government's main position on the...
Do you have a sign on your door that says, "We welcome favorable dicta"?
Certainly, Judge. The government's position on the first question is pretty simple. It's that in Buckmeyer, the court was faced with the whole-of-the-law approach versus the anti-mousetrapping approach and chose the anti-mousetrapping approach. The Solicitor General hasn't sought any further review of that, so that's the rule. Given that rule, though, it seems that the restoration of rights ought to occur upon receipt of the letter because you just can't be mousetrapped by something you never got.
Well, I really think that misunderstands the decision. The desire to avoid mousetrapping was, the court said, the reason why the statute says what it says. But the court didn't say that that makes the test subjective rather than objective. I mean, suppose the government wanted to show that the defendant was not smart enough to recognize what a full, free, and absolute pardon was. So even though the governor had given him a pardon, that didn't lift his firearms disability because he just didn't understand complicated legal concepts like pardons. You wouldn't make that argument. You wouldn't say that it was subjective in the sense that it really gets through to the criminal's mind what has happened.
I agree with you on that, Judge.
Right? If the guy's been pardoned, he's been pardoned. And one would think if the rights have been restored, they've been restored, whether he understands that or not. And if it doesn't matter whether he understands it, it doesn't matter where he gets the letter.
I think the wrinkle is that the right to possess firearms is not restored. The reason...
There was a problem that this letter, which Illinois was sending, was not accurate. I hope it's sending accurate letters now.
I do understand that they've sent a different letter and a curative letter that says to the extent you thought you were allowed to possess firearms or not.
By different, you mean different and accurate?
I would hope so. I would hope so. I know that they've sent a curative letter that says to the extent you thought you were misled, don't be misled. But... Really, I think the reason that...
But my basic point is you don't want to confuse the reason why a statute says what it says with there being some kind of subjective element in the statute. Right? There may have been subjective reasons why Congress enacted Rule X, but it doesn't follow that Rule X then calls for a subjective inquiry.
I understand your point on that, Judge. And in response, I would say that, you know, under Vetrano, it's the defendant's burden to show that one of these doesn't apply, and that given that it's the defendant's burden, should have to show that he at least got it. As to the second point, whether or not a letter that may have been sent in 1999 upon discharge for parole on the murder would have any effect on the attempted murder for which the defendant was discharged 5 years earlier, the government's point is that this mousetrapping line of cases says that the inquiry is limited to the content of the document. The document in this case, we don't have an example of any letter that Burnett got. He never produced one. But we have several samples, and they all say basically the same thing. They say, as of X date, you've completed the maximum of your sentence, and certain rights are restored. The government's position is that that's pretty clearly referring to the conviction for which you were just discharged from parole.
It's not pretty clearly. I mean, this is another problem with this letter. It could mean you've completed sentence X, so all your rights are restored, and you're no longer a convicted felon. Or it could mean this conviction is no longer causes these disabilities. And it doesn't say which of these it means. The puzzle to me, and I'll obviously be asking Mr. Welby about this more, is that it seems to me it's either all or none. This either restores the rights for all of your convictions. Sorry, it's either all or one. Either restores your rights for just the conviction that you just got finished with, or it has to restore your rights for all convictions. And the peculiarity is that the defendant seems to be arguing that it restored his rights for three convictions and not for two others. And I don't understand how that could be possible. If it restored his rights for all five convictions, then he can't be convicted as a felon in possession.
That would certainly be true, Your Honor. In response to that, I would say that the letter itself can only speak to the conviction for which the defendant has just been discharged. It's a form letter cranked out by the computer at the DOC, and it is certainly problematic for all the reasons the court has mentioned and probably others.
And one would think that would be true of a pardon. A pardon would be a pardon on a specific conviction. You get all your rights back with respect to that conviction, but if you haven't been pardoned on some others, you might not have your rights back.
That may be, Judge. I would say that
this letter was so poorly written.
Agreed on that. It's caused us lots of problems. I would say that when the letter is sent, the DOC can't know also the parolee's status as to any other convictions that are out there. The parolee may have had a conviction from another state or a federal conviction, so that the rights purported to be restored, those might not even be restored. So for that reason, it's the government's position that the letter can only speak to the conviction for which the defendant discharged on the date mentioned in the letter.
There's no case number or anything listed on any of these letters, right?
That's true, Judge. It just says as of this date.
So there's no way to identify the letter to the conviction, or is there?
Well, you know what you got out of prison for doing on a certain day.
Right, but there may have been concurrent sentences for multiple cases. It leaves many questions unanswered.
It certainly does, and that the maze of this defendant's priors was not easy for us to walk through, and that's frankly why we're asking for some guidance.
The new letter looks very much like the old letter. From what I can tell, they just removed the right to vote.
I believe that is an interim letter. It followed the quote-unquote Buckmeyer letter, but I think that they've started something even more recently.
Is there something?
That.
Is that in the record?
I don't think that the letter that they're currently using is in the record.
Okay.
Right. No other questions at this point. I'd reserve the rest of my time.
Thank you, Mr. Boyce. Mr. Welby.
May it please the Court. Counsel. Let me begin by attempting to answer the question you posed to Mr. Boyce, and that is why we believe there are qualifying convictions that would count for him being guilty of being a felon in possession, and that is that there are convictions that are subsequent to the April 1999 letter, which would qualify him. We did not, at the district court or on appeal, contend that the restoration of rights would act prospectively to say that his rights would be restored even if he committed future crime. So that's certainly not the case.
I thought the conviction that qualified him for the felon in possession conviction preceded his murder conviction. that wrong?
The two attempted murders precede the murder, the second degree murder conviction. So he has two attempted murders.
It wasn't the two attempted murder convictions that were the predicate felony for the felon in possession conviction.
To be honest, Your Honor, I don't remember what the specific alleged conviction was. There was no real dispute that he was of the status of a person who had been previously been convicted of a felon. It was not a trial, so there was a stipulation of fact as to his part that he had been previously convicted of a felon prior to his possession of the firearm on this particular case. I'd have to double-check the actual indictment to see what the specific...
But the status of these convictions determines not just sentence, but his status for purposes of 922 G1, right?
Absolutely. And that's the important issue on the appeal. There are subsequent convictions that would make him a felon, and he was then later found in possession of a firearm. The issue that arose was these old convictions, specifically the two attempted murders, the murder, and the aggravated battery, for which he received the exact same letter that Mr. Buckmeyer received, and that was proven to the district court satisfaction that a letter of that nature would have been sent, and then undertook the analysis of whether or not that letter would disallow those convictions for purposes of 921A20. It was our position below that Mr. Burnett stood in the exact same position as Mr. Buckmeyer, inasmuch as he would have certainly received a letter of that nature, or there was absolutely no doubt that a letter would have been sent. And the opinion in Buckmeyer repeatedly looks at if this notice is going to be provided, that the notice should be
Is that factual inference appropriate for the two attempted murder convictions, the sentences for which expired while he was incarcerated on the murder conviction?
Yes, I think that's the government's second point. And the letter that he received in 1999.
Well, let's clarify. There's no evidence that he received anything. What there is evidence of is an assumption that one was sent, because that's the ordinary practice of the Illinois Department of Corrections. So, I mean, we've got circumstantial evidence of the sending of these routine letters. We don't have any evidence of receipt, other than by operation of a presumption that something that's mailed is received.
There were those presumptions, Your Honor, and there was also a brief offer of proof. I could have called Mr. Burnett had the court required there to be something other than an objective finding. When the government did not hold the defendant to prove the custom and practice,
okay,
then I didn't put Mr. Burnett on the stand to to make that.
But back
offer
to the two attempted murder convictions, the sentences for which expired while he was incarcerated on the murder conviction, how is it that we're to infer, or is it an appropriate inference, that the Illinois Department of Corrections would have sent him one of these notices while he was still incarcerated?
That is not an accurate inference, and I don't think that's consistent with the evidence that we obtained or presented to the district court. I think the proper inference would be that Mr. Burnett received, upon his completion of his obligation to the Illinois Department of Corrections, a letter identical to the one in the Buckmeyer case. He was serving that sentence. All three sentences were being served concurrently after his probation had been...
Well, they were being served concurrently at the beginning, but then one of the attempted murder convictions expired, and then another attempted murder conviction expired, and then he served some more time, and then finally he's released. But when he's released then only from the murder conviction, because the others were long gone. Now, why should one infer that a letter he gets at the end of his murder conviction applies to prior convictions when it doesn't say so?
Well, I think your statement of facts is correct. I think the answer is that the letter that he received, in fact, did not specify that it was limited to one particular conviction or another.
One way or the other. But he gets it right when one conviction expires. So why should we infer that it applies to older convictions for which he didn't get such a letter?
He didn't get such a letter because his rights were not restored.
Why weren't they?
He was still under an obligation to the Illinois Department of Corrections. He did not have the right to vote. He did not have the right to hold a constitutional office. So he did not receive a letter advising him, you know, Mr. Burnett, you have a right to go out and vote. That would not be a correct statement. I think the answer to this question is actually found in Buckmeyer when it says, if the state sends a document that seems to restore all civil rights, the conviction does not count for federal purposes unless the document warns the person about lingering firearms disability. That's exactly what we have here. He was serving in a state facility where he received a letter indicating that he had completed his obligation to the Illinois Department of Corrections, a letter from that facility saying all of your obligations are finished and now all of your rights are restored. And under the reading of that case and as it applies to that statute, I think the answer is that the letter told him, at least objectively, that his rights were restored, and if they can't meet the federal proviso under the statute, then those convictions cannot be counted.
And so the notice effectively sweeps in not only the conviction that it ostensibly pertains to the extent that we can determine that from the face of the letter and the date of discharge, but also any prior convictions for which there is no evidence that a notice was sent?
This case does not require the court to make a decision that broad.
Yeah, but it seems to me it's got to be either all or none. Either we read this as applicable to the all or one, sorry. It's either the one whose conviction has just expired or all prior convictions. Well, which is the right way to read it?
All. I think the answer is that it applies to all your prior convictions. If the Illinois Department sends a letter saying all of your rights are restored and all of these convictions
and
are
you would apply that, I take it, to pardons and commutations and so on. If the governor of Illinois, just to take a wild hypothetical, says you were convicted and sentenced to death, I am pardoning you and restoring all your civil rights on this conviction, that would retroactively wipe out for federal purposes all these other convictions too?
Not necessarily, because the difference in the restoration of civil rights is that it's a function of the statutes of Illinois to restore those civil rights. It's not given by the grace of that letter.
No. Under Buckmeyer, the point is we're not looking to the whole of Illinois law. We're looking to what the notice says.
True.
So I give you this pardon example where the governor says, and your civil rights are hereby restored. Would that necessarily wipe out all his prior convictions?
If it addressed the three principal rights that are required under the notice provision, then I think the answer would have to be yes.
Well, if it says all.
My interpretation of that is that if it said all of your civil rights are restored, that would be a fair interpretation of Buckmeyer. I don't think we have to reach that conclusion because, just like Mr. Buckmeyer, Mr. Burnett was serving concurrent sentences. Mr. Buckmeyer didn't walk in here with eight letters from the Illinois Department of Corrections with case numbers on each one, saying all of my rights are restored. He had a single letter that the court found applied to all of his sentences. The only information on that letter is where Mr. Burnett was in jail or in prison and the date on which his obligations to the state were complete. With that information, I think the notice was sufficiently.
They had sent him this letter in 1994 when one of the attempted murder convictions expired. But they never sent him such a letter in 1999 after his murder conviction expired. In your view, would his murder conviction in 1990, his murder conviction count for federal purposes or not?
Yes. Because if he received nothing after the original notice that he received on the attempted murder in 1994, then by saying nothing, the notice could not be insufficient.
Why couldn't it apply to the murder conviction? The letter would have come after the murder conviction, although while he was still serving time for the murder conviction.
Because his rights had not been restored on that conviction.
I mean, the letter grossly misstates Illinois law, but we've assumed all along that this letter misstates Illinois law.
I'm not saying it's an easy question. But I think...
All right. Thank you, Mr. Welby.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Anything further, Mr. Boies?
Just a couple points. The court had asked before which prior was alleged in the indictment. That was the murder, the one that's at issue on the letter. Mr. Welby mentioned the offer of proof at sentencing regarding whether or not the defendant would have gotten the letter. That was after the court had already decided that the defendant didn't have to show anything more than the policy and practice of the IDOC, and the government's position is that that evidence alone isn't enough to overcome Vetrano. And then the last point is that the defendant conceded that they never sent him any notices upon the expiration of those attempted murders. There was no notice sent. The notice that was perhaps sent and maybe received, we don't really know, says on a certain date your obligations to the department have been to the Department of Corrections have been completed. Those obligations had already been completed 5 years prior on the attempted murders. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much to both counsel. And Mr. Welby, we appreciate your willingness to accept the appointment in this case and your assistance to the court as well as to your client. The case is taken under advisement.